Well, good morning, y'all. We are continuing in our series entitled The Secret to Life. We're going through Jesus' Sermon on the Mount as found in the Gospel of Matthew, chapters 5, 6, and 7, where Jesus says, look, you want to have the secret to a great life, and we looked at the fact that the word that he uses is the Greek word makarios, which is not just to have a blessed life, but a supremely blessed life, to have the best life ever. And in this sermon, he really just begins to strip away all of our preconceived ideas of what we have in our heads about what a successful life looks like. He turns it upside down and he says, now, here's the truth about having an abundant life. And he starts out with a call for anybody who wants to follow him to live differently, to live counterculturally, and he asks us to be salt and light in a dark world. And then last week, we talked about what it looks like to live an agape life, which means a life where we treat people differently than the rest of the world might. There's no bullying, there's no judgment, there's just grace, no matter what background or whatever it is that's an obstacle for that person to love the unlovely and to give grace to those that are hard to give grace to. And I want to pick it up today where we left off last week, where we finished out chapter 5, and then in verse 6, starting with verse 1, Jesus says, be careful. Don't practice your righteousness in front of others to be seen by them. If you do, you'll have no reward from your Father in heaven. So when you give to the needy, do not announce it with trumpets as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and on the streets to be honored by others. Truly, I tell you, they've received their reward in full. But when you give to the needy, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, so that your giving may be in secret. And then your Father, who sees what is done in secret, will reward you. Now, if I were just to sum this up in a couple sentences this morning, and we could pack it up and go home, I would say this. Jesus is telling us that it is very important that we live in such a way that is authentic. That we live in such a way that we believe in what we are doing. And then the second is like it, is that we are to live generously. Because at the end of the day, your image, what people may or may not think about you, will not matter. You can't get ahead when you're dead. And no matter how hard you try, you can't take it with you. So, Jesus says, when you give to the needy, do not announce it with trumpets or put a neon sign flashing here, this is what I gave, as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and on the streets to be honored by others. Truly, I tell you, they have received their reward in full. So these verses, as I mentioned, have kind of a double message, and it's almost running a parallel path. Jesus is telling a message that we get a message about something, but then there's another message kind of hidden in it. And I think that is that, you know, our faith should be authentic and not for show, and that we give generously to those who are in need, and we contribute to those who are in need in a meaningful way from our heart. And I hope that you've seen the trend so far in the sermon that Jesus is preaching as he's talking about having a makarios life, having a truly blessed life, that he's really hammering away that, you know, the more that we're able to overcome our innate desire to live a selfish life, to live a self-absorbed life, the more that we can beat that and live a life of giving and contributing to others, that's really what life is all about, the way that God designed it from the beginning, and that's where we will have a more fulfilling life. And so, you know, Jesus says, look, don't give. If you're going to give, like, don't give in such a way that's going to say, hey, you know, I'm all that. It's great. Look at me. I'm plopping this check down in the offering. Don't lift yourself up rather than the people who are in need. We're supposed to be lifting up the people who are in need and not our stroking our egos. And, you know, Jesus, I think, feels the need to address this issue because of some of the things that he was dealing with culturally at the time. the religious leaders, the Pharisees, the Sadducees, they were like in this really weird competition almost to be, you know, looking the most religious, the most spiritual, the most moral, the most pious, so that everybody would think they're great based on their religiosity. And, you know, and that's just not what it's about. And in fact, there's a great image about this in the Gospel of Mark. Jesus is hanging out in the temple with his disciples during the time of the offering. And in the temple, you know, they put the offering in the front. So if you can imagine, during the offering time, I got a big old bucket right here in front of me. I'm just sitting here while you're all walking up and, you know, dropping your money into the bucket so that I can clearly see how much you're giving, right? I think offerings may go up, so we may try it. Just joking. But, you know, people would file forward in the temple and they would drop, you know, large amounts of money to show off about how great and religious and spiritual and moral they are. Look how great I am. And there was like, you know, it was just this kind of ridiculous show that happened for so many people. And so as Jesus is sitting there and he's watching all this, he's taking it all in, all of a sudden there's this little old poor, as Jesus describes it, poor widow who came up, walking up, and she's going to give her offering. And you could evidently tell that this woman didn't have a thing to her name in this world. And as she comes forward, she's like, you know, mixed in with all these wealthy, super religious people. And you could almost, you know, feel them look down on her and say, like, what good is that little gift going to do? Right? What? Like, you're not good enough. And she walks forward and in all humility drops these two little copper coins into the offering. And the Bible says that those two little copper coins were only worth pennies in our day and age by our standards, but they could have paid for her next meal. All she had, drops them in. Jesus sees an opportunity to bring his disciples together and have a teaching moment. And so he said to all of his disciples, he said, honestly, I just have to tell you, this poor widow has put more into the offering than all the others combined. They gave out of their great wealth, but she gave out of her poverty all that she had, everything that she had to live in. You see, this is the perfect picture, I think, of what giving's all about. And, you know, giving gets all jacked up by churches and people, and, you know, everybody's flawed, right? But in its purest form, this whole idea of giving is that it's about being all in. It's about giving that comes from the heart. It's not proud. It's not egotistical. It isn't drawing attention to yourself. It's a humbling thing in that there is this desire to give sacrificially in such a way that is meaningful to me. The amount of money that we give, God could care less about. If you give $100 and I give $100 and they give $100, that's three different things, right? Because that $100 means a different thing to everybody else. But what it is talking about is that we are giving in such a way that it is a meaningful amount to me. And that the whole point of giving is that we become so overwhelmed with gratitude for what God has done, the way he's blessed us, that we're able to walk in his grace, that we just have to do something and we want to give. And so, you know, I think that this idea of giving every Sunday, and you may have noticed here at Westridge, we talk a lot about it, that, you know, during, especially during the offering time, I hope we preach this every Sunday, that if you're not at a place in your relationship with God where you have been impacted by the radical love of God, where you feel his forgiveness, that you feel his grace, then I would rather you not give, because I don't really understand what the point of that is. The point of giving is that it's a tangible outlet for us to be able to have something that says, thank you. I'm releasing part of what means so much for me in this world. God has blessed me so much. Thank you. And there is this practice of the letting go of this world, right? The more that we're able to give away, the more we're able to let go of the stuff of this world. And there's so many people that, you know, that believe that the church is just after my money, and it's just not the case. And so, you know, we've just kind of taken the stance here at Westridge that, and I don't think in 21 years we've ever done it, that if the money's not there and we can't make our mortgage payment or the electric bill needs to get paid or the city of Elgin water bill, which is never cheap, that when we have, you know, a tight time, we don't come and like say, hey, like help us pay the bills. We don't ever do that. We've made a commitment that we're never going to teach something that is contrary to the Bible, and the Bible clearly teaches that giving is between you and God. And we shouldn't be giving out of a sense of obligation or the fact that we're guilting you saying we haven't made budget this month, but that we're giving in an honest way because we say, gosh, I have been so blessed. I mean, just this week, for an example, I was able to close a transaction in my business that I've been working on for 8 months. It just sucked the life out of me. And I was so grateful that I just wanted to write a check this morning and just say thank you for blessing me in such a great way. And that is the point. It's just an outlet for us to be able to have something tangible to say thank you to God. The idea that we become so filled up with gratitude for the grace of God that we just have to say something. We have to do something. And so giving to the needy, both serving and contributing financially, should be out of a sense of an overflow of joy that we have in our lives. So there's this contrast that Jesus makes between giving out of an abundance of wealth, right, where you're able to just kind of give out of surplus cash flow. I can give that $100 because I have $100,000, and so that $100 doesn't really affect me, so I can throw $100 and everybody goes, wow, that's a lot of money. But it's not to that person. And then you have somebody who only has $100 to their name, and so they give $10. That's a meaningful gift to them. They're like, gosh, I hope I can get groceries next week. And, you know, again, it is not the amount. It is what it is that is a meaningful amount to you based on your circumstances. And I think that in all things, Jesus is just driving this point home that there just needs to be a sense of authenticity about what we're doing in the area of giving. Then he goes on and says, but when you give to the needy, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, so that you're giving in secret, so that you're maybe giving in secret, then your Father who sees what is done in secret will reward you. And that's really what this passage is talking about. Again, I think that Jesus is kind of swinging the pendulum to the other side because, you know, these religious leaders were so egotistical and so into themselves that, you know, Jesus is saying, you know, do it in secret, keep it on the down low because you guys are just going crazy on this stuff with your egos. But really, again, the point is that what we do in giving to the needy, we give in authentic way. When I look at the ministry of Jesus, Jesus was very involved in the needs of people, and he did what we call incarnational ministry, which means that he was very present in the lives of the people that he was helping. So he just didn't give a handout and then, you know, move them on. He built relationships with people. He sat down and had meals with people. He did whatever he could to help empower people to change. If you listen to him, he says, okay, go and sin no more. Go and be changed. Jesus, more than anything else, wanted to give somebody to empower them, to give them a hand up so that their lives could be changed forever. And that is the exact philosophy of ministry that we have here at Westridge. We really believe in the idea of empowerment versus enablement. In other words, we want to give somebody a hand up rather than a hand out. We want to make sure that we don't enable somebody to stay stuck in a victim position where they can't get up on their own two feet on their own. We want to help them to be able to rise above their circumstances, because if we're honest, There's a lot of people that have been dealt bad hands in life. And if we can just give them a little help at one time or another when they are in need, it can make a difference where they can rise up on their own and have a whole different quality of life. And I think, you know, a great example of that is if I have a 30-year-old kid, my kid, living in my basement, right? And my wife is washing his clothes and he's getting three meals a day and living fat and giving him a little gas money on the side. What motivation does he have to get up out of the basement? Nothing, right? He's living a pretty posh life. And you just go, dude, here's some gas money. Go get a J-O-B and get on up out of my house, right? That's the same principle. It's the same thing in outreach. We don't want to give handouts where we are enabling people and have them staying stuck in the victim position. We really want to empower people to overcome their circumstances and to create a different life for themselves. And I think, you know, one of the problems is, I think for all of us, is one, we don't know what to do. So Jesus says, do something, right? Do something in the area of contributing. Give something. Do something. So if you're doing nothing, do something. And the problem is what? Figuring out what it is I can do. How much should I give or not give? And I think we become so immobilized that sometimes we just overthink it and we think, I don't want to enable somebody. I don't want to be taken advantage of. I don't want to give that guy 20 bucks and then he goes and smokes it or drinks it or whatever. And so as a result, we don't do anything, which is also the wrong thing to do. And so we've got to figure out what we can do and do something. And I think that's where the church comes in. So I could just only tell you our context. So at Westridge, we've created an outreach strategy here to try to give everybody the opportunity to be involved in people's lives who are in need, to live generously, and to do incarnational ministry. In other words, to be present in the lives of people who are in need and make an impact and to help empower those people. And I think that we've put together this plan that's really worked well. And we have so many new people. I'm just going to give you a quick overview for the rest of the time that we have this morning, just to help you to understand some of the things that we have available where you can, you know, plug in and get involved in some incarnational ministry and make a difference. So the first strategy that we have is really dealing with the people of Westridge and trying to support and impact people who sit right next to you on a Sunday morning. Without even knowing it, you know, somebody's life can be falling apart in the row that you're in. And whether somebody is going through a divorce or they've just lost their husband or wife or they are in financial crisis or have gotten cancer or whatever it is, people are in crisis all the time. And so over the years, we have developed different teams of people. And a great example of that is the Compassion Team. The Compassion Team has a lot of ministries. The overall arching vision of it is that we can go into somebody's life in crisis and we can do transportation or childcare or finances or meals or cards or whatever it is, and we can help make an impact in those people's lives. And so there's a lot of opportunity to be able to do that. The second strategy is that we want to target the city of Elgin. So we have to get, you know, we don't, as a church, you don't want to be self-absorbed either. You don't want to be selfish as a church. And so we want to get outside of our four walls. And so this one was a tough one to do incarnational ministry in Elgin. And it took a long time to really find the right thing that fit the personality of the church, where it's not just giving, but it really is incarnational. And I think it was 2011 when one of the teachers of Huff Elementary came and made us aware of a lot of the needs that were there in the school. And for those of you who don't know, Huff is in one of the most impoverished neighborhoods of Elgin. And so we kind of dipped our toe in the water and did a few things. And there was such an overwhelming response that we knew that this was it. And it was a great opportunity to partner with this school. We developed relationships with the teachers. We developed relationships with the administration and the kids and really began to make an impact in a real way. And this is about as incarnational as you can get because we have people at Huff all the time. We have people at Huff who are doing after-school activities where the kids, you know, don't have the opportunity to go home to a mom and dad because their parents have to work. And so they do after school activities to help them do that. We provide food over holiday breaks and coats for the kids who can't afford winter coats. Every week, there are a group of people that go over to Huff and fill backpacks full of food so that the kids have food over the weekend. This cool thing that happened last year, I think Lisa Wollenberg really drove this vision of it's more than just a toy drive. It's the idea that, again, to give parents who are in need respect and dignity. So we convert this entire room into a big shopping center. And so we ask all of you to donate either new or lightly used toys, and they get put up, and this whole thing gets set up, you know, in little shopping aisles and stuff. And parents who can't afford to get their kids toys on Christmas, they can come in here and shop and get their kids toys for Christmas. And it's a pretty awesome, overwhelming thing. While they're shopping in here, the kids can go do Santa's workshop and breakfast with Santa and all kinds of stuff. And it is an absolutely meaningful time. We need volunteers for that. And toys, and there'll be more about that coming soon. And then also we do this mentorship thing where we want to be emotionally supportive of kids who are in crisis. And so Susie Geltner leads that, and she'll be out at guest services after the service, and you can find out more about that. But again, it's entering somebody's life who needs us. We also do homeless ministry stuff, and rather than reinventing the wheel, we partner with PADS, and we partner with Vineyard Church and Wayside to do meals for the homeless, and so there's opportunities there. So there's a lot of opportunities locally to be able to do that. And then the third strategy that we have, again, was a pretty challenging thing, is how to do incarnational ministry internationally. And so a decision that my wife and I made strategically was instead of buying a second home in California, we made the decision to buy a second home in a third world country in Nicaragua, where we could live in a community of people who are in need and really to build relationships with them and to be in community with them, which has really happened. And so over the last few years, we've developed, you know, hundreds of relationships and have an amazing community of people who we support and support us down there. But that ministry has been adopted by Westridge. It's called Nika Angels, and it focuses in the area of education. So we send work groups down to rehab schools, build kitchens so that the kids can have hot lunches, computer labs so that kids can have enhanced learning opportunities. The government is not backing these schools, and so if it were not for us, these schools would be sitting in bad states of disrepair, and these kids would be going to school in squalor. Clean water is a huge issue in Nicaragua, where, you know, there's kids that have diarrhea all the time, like just perpetually, because they don't have a clean source of water. And so we go in, we'll drill wells into neighborhoods that we know need water wells and bring clean water to that neighborhood. We have a sponsor a child program, which helps kids with food and supplies during the year and helps them, again, support them educationally. Average kid drops out of school in fourth grade, and so they don't make it past the fourth grade. And so we want to do whatever we can to help support them and encourage them in that. And then my wife has started a sea turtle preserve called Sacred Sand. And so I think that she's hatched more than 20,000 sea turtle eggs at this point. So, and she sits on all of them personally and makes sure they hatch. But no, it's a great ministry, taking care of God's creatures. And so it's a very diverse, fun environment that's a Westridge thing. And it was very sad this year. I think many of you have heard that the political situation down in Nicaragua has been very difficult. It got violent, and so we actually had to cancel several work trips this year that we had planned, and it was very frustrating to not be able to get down there and to support people and to work. But I want you to know that the support for all of those people have not stopped, and the work continues to go on. And so the Nika Angels workers put together a little video to send you a message this morning. So if you want to play that.
Hello, Westridge. Greetings from Nicaragua. I would like to talk about the situation in Nicaragua in the past 4 months. That it's been, as many of you guys know, it's been critical here. But thanks to your support, we have been able to keep going and keep helping the schools, and our work hasn't stopped. And as many of the other nonprofits that were in the area, they left, so we're still here. As you can see in the back, we're starting a new, another project in Tamborcito School, and all this is thanks to you and your support. Thanks a lot.
Which, by the way, that's the difference between enablement and empowerment, right? So an enabling situation would be that when it's a bunch of gringos going down and helping people and giving money or whatever, that a political situation happens and the whole thing falls apart, right? Empowerment is we have boots on the ground from people who live in the community. We've empowered them to do great things. And just because we didn't send workers down there, work didn't stop happening. They're doing it on their own. And they're doing a school right now in Tamborcito. That work continues to go on. They continue to try to build businesses for themselves. That's what empowerment is. And that's what it looks like, where things don't fall apart when things get tough or when we can't be doing it. It's not about us. It's about them and empowering them for greatness. We're going to have a wine to water event, which is a big wine tasting that we do. A lot of talk about wine today. it's been a long week. We convert this into a big wine tasting room, and all the proceeds we get from that beautiful evening, by the way, goes to Nika Angels, and we'll continue to support them. So those are the three strategies that we do, and the whole point of it is that we just want to create a framework for everybody to like not have an excuse for not getting involved in contributing to people who are in need, where we try to strip away the excuses and say, you know, whatever it is, whether you want to be local, whether you want to be international, if you want to be here in the church, you want to just keep it to Sunday morning thing or whatever, there's an opportunity for everybody to get involved. But I think the point is that at some point, we just have to stop doing nothing and start doing something. And I think that that's, you know, really, really important. You know, that's really, the coolest thing is that all of these ministries have really started because some Westridger saw a need and decided to do something and to get involved and to get their hands dirty and to be inconvenienced in our lives where we're not laying on the couch watching football or whatever. We're actually getting out, doing something, making a difference, doing the work that it takes to make a difference. And, you know, that's where the rubber hits the road. And I think that, you know, the least of these, as Jesus describes it, is when the church is at its best, we are giving a voice to people who don't have a voice. And we're getting the backs of people who are completely unsupported. And we're in the corner of somebody who feels unloved. And we are there in their corner being a cheerleader, giving them dignity and respect and saying, I give a rip about you. I am here for you. And no matter what you go through, I will stand with you. Here, I'm just going to paint you one unorthodox picture of incarnational ministry that I think is absolutely beautiful. A friend of mine was over a couple weeks ago, and we were having a glass of wine, shocker. And we were just hanging out, and he said, you know, I have to do this thing over the weekend that I'm not really excited about. And I'm like, well, what is it? He said, well, I have a neighbor up by my home in Wisconsin, and we just always have, through the years, smoked cigars together and just hung out, and it's a beautiful friendship. And so we always try to get cool cigars and share them together and smoke. And he said, this guy's got cancer. And they said that he only has days to live. and he's now on hospice, and he said his last request is he wants me to come up to Wisconsin and have a cigar with him. And since he was there at my house that night, I said, wait, I have a special situation. And so I had a couple hand-rolled cigars from Nicaragua that I gave him to take up. And he was able to go up that weekend, and he sat there and he said, you know, we just smoked these cigars, had a beautiful evening, talked about the stuff that's real about life. And he said, that night, he went home to be with Jesus. It was a beautiful night. He said it was the most beautiful night he's ever experienced because he was there in that moment. That is, Jesus would smoke a cigar with that guy, right? He would. And that's incarnational ministry. It's being present in somebody's life. You don't have to have anything profound to say. You don't have to have anything like great and, you know, eloquent to say. It's just being present in somebody's life when they are in the moment of need. And we talk about this a lot, and we're never going to shy away from it, but there will come a day when we have to give an account for our lives, and we're going to stand there. And the Bible says, you know, there's going to be a whole group of people that say, Jesus, when did we see you hungry and not give you something to eat? When did I see you thirsty and not give you something to drink? But if we can turn that on its head, we can have this life, this super blessed life that Jesus wants to give us, then we just know that our mantra is, whatever I have done, even to the least of these, one cup of water, one well, one school, one child, one coat at a time, whatever it is that we have done even to the least of these, we've done it unto Jesus.